It's always very nice to see what you have been working on, and this year it's Pyrolism, which I understand is very difficult in the microcontroller space. Do your earrings also run TinyGo?
Yes,
And you can turn the microphone away.
they do.
The microphone is still unmuted. Let me. It was a hardware issue.
That's
So I
fair.
want to give you a round of applause for the person with the TinyGo earrings.
Well, hello everyone. So today I'm going to talk about the implementing parallelism. As you all know, concurrency is not the same as parallelism. Concurrency is like running multiple coroutines and having them run independently of each other and communicating and such. And this is all built into the Go language itself, unlike most other languages. Parallelism is actually something different. That's actually running multiple things at the same time, like on different CPU cores. And while Go is well known for doing parallelism very well, in the beginning, it was only a single-threaded system. Like only starting with Go 1.5, parallelism was enabled by default. In TinyGo, so far we haven't had any parallelism because basically most microcontrollers are single-core, like almost all of them. This is slowly changing. So why are we adding parallelism now? First of all, because TinyGo is not only used for microcontrollers, but also for Linux. For example, the Euro project, which is something like BusyBox, but written in Go. Well, they would like to shrink their binaries, and so they try to use TinyGo. I'm sure there are many other projects who use TinyGo for a similar purpose on Linux. For WebAssembly, so basically we do have concurrency on WebAssembly, but the way it works is it unwinds the stack and rewinds the stack on every coroutine switch, which is it's not efficient at all. It's like really slow and causes some issues, and like I would like to try whether using WebWorkers instead works better. Also, it's probably going to improve performance, but that's another side benefit. And of course, for bare metal support. So there are very few microcontrollers that have more than one core. Basically, all of them are single core. But there are a few exceptions. One is the RP2040 that's actually running on this gopher batch. But this chip didn't exist back when I started TinyGo. But that's why we are adding threading multi-core support right now, because it's starting to get useful. The rest of the talk will focus on Linux mostly, but most of the things I'll be talking about are applicable to all the other things as well. On Linux, I decided to use one-to-one threading. That means, or one-to-one scheduling. That means that every goroutine runs in a separate thread. Actually, that's how GCC Go also works, if I remember correctly. This has a few downsides. Like, for example, it will use a little bit more RAM, but not that much more. Most of it is virtual. Only like 8 kilobytes is physical RAM at the start of goroutine. And it will be a little bit slower. Like, switches between goroutines will be slower. So there are a few downsides, but the benefits are that it's like way easier to implement. I just use pthreads, basically. CGO calls are very easy. Just call them instead of like the main standard Go needs to switch to a different seed stack to run CGO and then switch back. That's one of the major reasons why it's so slow. System calls can just be made directly. Like, there's no reason to use EPO and things like that. And also, when a Go routine does some numeric computation, for example, that doesn't block, it can just lock up the OS thread without the OS knowing. Like, the scheduler has to preempt it at some point, but I think they put in like checksets at some point. So one Go routine doesn't hog the system. But when you're using sharing, the operating system is already doing this by default, so it's free, basically. So there are a few, and here on the slide you can see, for comparison, the different performance overheads. And like, yeah, thread launch takes like 5 microseconds, and that's a while, but it's not that much time. To implement all this, a lot of things were needed. First of all, of course, the scheduler. Like, instead of using a single thread, it uses multiple threads, so obviously that needs to change. The garbage collector needed to change. Before, we could just allocate memory, and as soon as the heap ran out, we ran a garbage collection cycle, and by definition, there was nothing else running, because that was the only thing running at the time. But now we need to stop the whole world, every thread that's running. And we do this basically by sending each goroutine, or each thread actually, a POSIX signal. Basically, to pause, scan all the stacks, scan the globals, and then everything can start running again, and the heap can be all the garbage can be freed, basically. I'll come back to Chen and Select later if there's enough time. The sync package, I'll also come back to that, but I can already say that it's using futaxes. Sync Atomic actually didn't need any changes at all. We were already using LVM intrinsics for atomic instructions, so that just worked. No changes needed. And a few other things like println. You don't want multiple goroutines printing at the same time and like interleaving on the same line. That's just going to be a mess. So it locks the output, then prints the whole line, then unlocks the output. To explain everything, I need to explain futaxes first. So what's a futax? It stands for fast user space mutex, but it's a system call, so it's not that fast, and not in user space. And also, it's not really a mutex. Like, so I'm not sure where the name came from. But you can build mutexes out of them. Like, they are basically the building block of all the concurrency primitives, like mutexes, semaphores, the wait group in Go, or channels. Basically, everything you want to synchronize, you can use futaxes for. So the way, so the way it works is basically, if a lock, for example, is uncontended, like there's no other threads using it at the same time. It's just an atomic instruction, so it's really, really fast. And only when it's contended, when there are multiple threads trying to use the same resource, only then there's a system call being made. So this is a big reason why locks nowadays are like super fast as long as you're not contended. The API looks something like this. It varies depending on the operating system. I'll get to this later. But this is like basically the lowest common denominator across all operating systems. The way you can imagine this is that the operating system has an internal hash map of addresses or pointers to a list of threads that are waiting. And there are two important calls, or three, depending on how you count. Waits in the kernel, this is the pseudocode you can see here. In the kernel, something like this happens. It checks whether the address that is passed that should point to an atomic variable. It checks whether it is the value that it expects, and if so, it adds the calling thread to the waiting threads on this specific address in the hash map I mentioned, and if not, it just returns. But if it matches, it also just pauses the thread, because that's the whole point of it. And to unpause it, another thread can call wake, or wake one in this case, and say to the kernel, please wake one thread that's waiting on this address. Note that the operating system doesn't really, like, if you just change the value at the address, nothing changes. Remember, it's basically the address or the pointer is basically just a key into the hash map inside the kernel. So yeah, when you call wake, it'll just wake one thread, or when you call wake all, it will wake all waiting threads. And that's basically all the primitives you need to implement basically all concurrency primitives. And this is how it looks on different operating systems. On Linux, it's a single system call, overloaded system call. It does a lot of different things. Not going to go into this. Check the main page. On macOS, there's two internal functions that you can call. They're not really documented anywhere. However, LVM, standard C++ library, uses it internally, so I guess it's not going to change ever. Hopefully. Unless Apple does something stupid. On Windows, there are three functions that are very descriptive. And on WebAssembly, there are also, in the WebAssembly threads proposal, I should say. Actually, threads proposal just describes atomics for some reason. It's weird. But WebAssembly is basically a subset of all the other operating systems, which makes sense because that's what WebAssembly does. In TinyGo, I've wrapped all these different APIs in this simple API. A Vuetex is basically just a superset of an atomic integer. It's basically the same API as before, just the wait, wake, and wake all, just in a nice API. And I found that, like, on Bare Metal, I'm using almost the same API. The external API is exactly—it's all internal, but like the exported functions are exactly the same. So it still has an atomic value, but because TinyGo is basically the operating system, it's running Bare Metal, so that's the only thing that's running there. It can implement things however it wants. So the Vuetex type itself just has a linked list of waiting coroutines. And you can see here that, for example, the wait function is basically the same code as before, but now it uses pinlock for locking. For example, the RP2040 has a hardware spin locks for some reason. It does have, yeah. And this is how you actually use a Vuetex. To be clear, this is not the same implementation as standard Go. It's similar, but it's not the same. And also, I skipped all the overflow checking here. So this is not super safe, but it should work. I didn't test, but it should work. That's the same methods as you would normally see on Vuetex. Yeah, sorry, on a wake group. Add, wait, and done. Done is basically just adding one negative number, so it's really simple. adding is actually, because a futex is also a atomic variable, it can just atomically add the delta and check whether the result of the addition is zero. For example, if the delta is negative. And if it's zero, that means it's done, and it can wake up all the waiting coroutines. So it signals every other coroutine to finish. The wait function loads the current value in the atomic value, checks whether it's zero. If it's zero, it's done. It's ready. It can return. If it's not, it will wait. But as you can see, it will pass the current counter value. If it didn't, it would immediately return. However, one note is that you can see that it's a for loop. This is because the wait function can spuriously return. This is an operating system limitation. I think it can spuriously return on like interrupts and stuff like that, POSIX signals, that kind of stuff. So it can sometimes happen. So it needs to be in a loop until it finishes, but it's very low overhead. Now channels. Channels may seem a lot more difficult, but actually channels in Go are most easily implemented by just using a lock, basically. For example, to send a value on a channel, what happens is the sender first locks the channel. It checks whether there's a receiver ready. If so, it can proceed the channel operation. If not, it checks whether there's a space in the buffer, if it's a buffer channel. And if so, it can store the value and return. And if not, it'll need to wait. So it adds itself to the linked list of waiting receivers. It will unlock the channel and pause itself and wait for the next sender, next receiver to use this channel. So that's relatively straightforward. It's still low-level synchronization, so not super straightforward, but relatively straightforward. Select, however, is a lot more complicated. So what you can see here is just an example of what can go wrong. So say you have two coroutines, foo and bar, and they both have a select statement. So if you naively, so the way select works is basically by locking every channel that is in the select statement. But it has to do this, and when everything is locked, it can check whether any of them can proceed or add itself to the senders and receivers list, etc., etc. But if you do this naively, you can see here the problem. For example, coroutine foo locks channel 1, and then coroutine bar locks channel 2 at the same time. And then coroutine foo tries to lock channel 2, but can't because it's already locked. And coroutine bar tries to lock channel 1, but it's also blocked, so that's not going to work. Main Go implementation solves this by basically sorting all the channels, because channels are a reference type, I guess. It's internally, it's a pointer. So it can just sort by address. And that's one solution. And if you have like many cores and many select statements running at the same time, that's probably the fastest. But for TinyGo, we have different trade-offs. And I basically used a global mutex for this. So whenever a select is going on, it'll just lock it for a short while it's processing. So that's mostly all the, I can go into mutexes, but mutexes are surprisingly complicated. It's more complicated, like they're way more complicated than wait group for some reason. There's like you want them optimized in case there's no contention, etc. It's not going to go into that. So that's so far all the Linux stuff, and but I also ported this to this Gopher Batch. This is actually running very beta code right now. You can see here what's happening. So I optimized, this is a Mandelbrot fractal. And I managed to run two different go routines during, so the work is spread across two different cores. And so that the calculations can be done in parallel, because Mandelbrot calculations are really complex to get right. And yeah, this chip is not that fast. And by running them in parallel, well, you can see the difference. I measured it to be about 30% faster. There's probably some overhead, I don't know. So that's great. It's still alpha quality, but I should be making a pull request somewhere in the next week or so. The way I implemented this is basically by running the scheduler, the old scheduler that's used for single core operations on both cores at the same time. So both cores will be waiting for the next go routine to arrive to be ready. There's some stuff around sleeping, but that's fixed. So that's where we are at so far. Next up, we need to clean up everything and merge. Linux is almost ready. Like, there are some comments, but it's basically ready to be merged. macOS, I added support for, but there are some CI issues. It also uses pthread, so it's very similar to Linux. Bare metal needs a little bit more cleanup. The code is quite terrible. And then maybe I'll look into WebAssembly support. Not sure how many people are interested in that. Maybe in ESP32 support. The ESP32 is not a chip that has two different cores. And of course, some performance improvements. So, but yeah, that can happen after the initial implementation is done. So that's it.
Applause. Sadly, I have no time for questions. I'm really sorry, but I need to catch up because of some things with something called Lightning Talks, and Ron is usually famous for running out. So if you have questions for her, there is an amazing hallway track. Just give her the free drink of her choice to thank her for this amazing work in TinyGo. Thank you.